The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we are ready, second hour. Glad you are with us. If you missed the first hour, you can imagine what the conversation was about. People still chatting about Saturday night in College Station. And we had Jimbo Fisher on here about 45 minutes ago, and we'll recap some of what he had to say about beating Nick Saban, being the first assistant to do so. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. Pete Thamel joining us on the shakeup in college football and Coach O's future in Baton Rouge. Let us check in next with Matt in Mobile, Alabama.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We are doing great. Good afternoon.
Good. This is like my second or third time calling, I believe, but I'm an Alabama fan, and just assessing the situation Saturday night, the way I look at it is I have a friend of mine who manages a crew for, you know, an oil company, an oil rig, and, you know, if he leaves that crew into a situation where the oil rig almost explodes several times, he's going to be removed from that situation, and he's going to be perceived as an emergency situation. And you would get him out of there and get somebody new in there that's competent as soon as possible. And that's what I look like at with this Pete Golding situation. I'm tired of hearing everybody making excuses for the guy and saying that it all comes down to the players, that the players need to be motivated and they need to do their jobs and everything. No, it's the defensive coordinator's job to motivate the players. And if he's not a good motivator and they're not doing their jobs over this long period of time with the talent that he's got, he's being given the best talent in all of college football, and he can't take that defense from being even a top 10 defense. And it's unacceptable, you know?
Yeah, I'm here.
You can't take that defense from being...
Yeah, I think we lost the call. I get you. I get what you're saying, though. And the Pete Golding conversation has been going on for a couple of years. And you know, there are momentary signs of improvement like last week, and then we're right back to where we are on this program, having conversations about his future. Thank you for the call. Let's continue next and talk to Tony. Hey, Tony.
Well, good afternoon, Paul. I just wanted to start off by saying, ha-ha-ho-ho-ha-ha-ha. That defense has just gone, you know, ever since Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart left, it's continuously declined, and ha-ha-ho-ho, he's going to have to find him a defensive coordinator. Ha-ha-ho-ho-ho.
Ha-ha-ho-ho-ho. Is it Christmas already? Let's continue with Trey, who is in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Trey.
How you doing, my friend?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I'm going to make an assessment of Saturday night. Then I have a couple of questions for you to go back to the two guys that just called about Pete Golding. First of all, that coached Alabama team Saturday night, I think, was the worst coached Nick Saban team I've ever seen on the field, from the offense to the defense and including special teams. They were not with it, and I don't know why. But if I'm not mistaken, Paul, there were two men wide open for touchdowns. Twice, people in that secondary ran into each other for wide open receivers. And if I'm not mistaken, Nick Saban has a lot to do coaching that secondary. So you
sure
need
does.
To put people need to put some blame on Nick Saban in that secondary, because they were absolutely lost Saturday. They were lost. The offensive line could not block that rush. They kept coming in from the same side, and they had no answer for that blitz. And the second thing is, and I'll let you go and let you comment on this, we all blame Ed Orgeron on the assistants that he hired. So if that's the case, then the people need to get on Nick Saban and the people that he have hired. And I don't believe either one of them should go. I'm not one jumping on coaches. But for everybody to jump on coaches, Nick Saban is ultimately the man in charge, and he coaches that secondary. And that secondary was lost Saturday night. You have a good day, Mr. Feinbaum.
Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. Really appreciate it. Let's talk to Frank in Texas. Hey, Frank.
Hi, Paul. Thank you. This is my second call, and I've heard some other guys talking about Saban and talking about the secondary, and I have a really thought about that. You know, if you'll watch his, he's been doing maybe a little less coaching, and he needs to get more involved in the secondary and do less commercials. He worked with that Aflac duck a lot, if you see that, and he's got that one with good coverage, and maybe he ought to put him in the secondary.
Frank,
a couple of
I don't think Saban's doing those commercials midweek. I think he probably wrapped them up in August.
Okay. I don't know. Anyway, what I really want to say is legend is the one. I've been listening to you, Paul, watching you for a number of years. Probably the most annoying human being I've ever seen, the way he laughs and that goofy picture of himself with that top button on his golf shirt. The only person I've ever seen do that was Forrest Gump. And so I call him Gump, and that's who he reminds me of. And I don't know what he was proud of in that picture. He looks like it. Maybe Alabama just won the Iron Bowl, or maybe he had got new tires for his house or whatever it was, but he's got this real proud look on his face. I wish he had the guts to call in and defend himself, because he made fun of Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies for weeks, okay? And Jimbo outcoached Saban, okay, Saturday night, all right? And the Aggies outplayed Alabama.
I agree. Hey, thank you for the call. Kelly in Long Island. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Thanks. So, a little bit off the subject, what do you think of Florida State's resurgence so far? And what do you think the futures are for Kentucky, Ole Miss, and Arkansas going forward?
Well, I think the Florida State resurgence is necessary, and I think beating North Carolina was important. Some of the other games perhaps did not impress me as much, but that has to be considered significant. And I think Mike Norvell, after a miserable start that could have gone either way in the Notre Dame game, and then the next game he just threw away. I think has steadied everything down, and that's critical. I think he's recruited fairly well, so I think he may have passed the most important point. Coaches go through that, like with Ed Ogeron. He had to win that game Saturday night. He didn't need to be down 35-7. He lost. He got blown out. The obvious is right there in front of him now. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's check in with Brandon up next. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
All good, Brandon.
Good. So one thing I want to just make a few points, because it seems like Georgia fans and a lot of SEC, like opposite of Alabama fans, are just like losing their rocker about this one game. But if you recall, Cameron Latu had a touchdown pass that he dropped in the end zone. He catches that. The field goal doesn't matter. You got to go back down the field and score. And then two, we rushed for over 150 yards. We threw for over 350 yards, three tubs and
one
interception.
Hey, Brandon, how does any of that matter?
I'm just saying that the game itself wasn't just a blowout game.
Brandon, we're not talking about a normal team here. Alabama is measured against perfection. Everyone else is measured against Alabama. So, I mean, don't give me stats on how Alabama did this or that. Alabama was not supposed to lose that game. It doesn't matter the fact that they lost at the last minute. Who cares?
No. I agree they weren't supposed to win the game, but numbers don't lie. And then, two, Texas A&M had to play the game of their life. Their quarterback made some
Brandon,
amazing throws.
They did. I mean, wake up, okay? Alabama lost. The fact that Calzada played better than we've ever seen him doesn't factor in to the fact that Alabama lost. Get a reality check there, okay? Let's take a break. Pete Thamel, who does a reality check every time he opens his mouth and writes an article, will be with us to talk about the shakeup in college football and Coach O's future.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And hey, welcome back. During the break, most of you were watching Coach O at his news conference today saying he doesn't need to be told about how important it is to win in Louisiana, nor has he been told about his job status. He also isn't paying attention to what is being written, which is a good thing because it wasn't too many days ago that Pete Thamel was writing about his future in Yahoo. And Pete joins us after a crazy weekend. Pete, thanks so much to talk to you about. But let me start with Coach O. It seems like the clock is ticking. What does the future look like for him in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, it's hard to see a path for him to save his job at this point, Paul. You know, they went 5-5 last season. They're 8-8 since they won the title. And the issue with Ed Orgeron as the head coach of LSU is that he has very little to do with the scheme. And in reshaping his coaching staff after Joe Brady, and really after Dave Aranda, who I think Joe Brady was so magical in that season with Joe Burrow, that I think what Aranda did to keep that program together has gotten lost a little bit. He's actually off to a nice, quiet 5-1 start at Baylor this season. He's just as simply failed in replacing those coaches and doesn't have his hands enough on the X's and O's on either side of the ball to fix it himself, and that's just sort of left the program flailing. And I don't see a way they can recover at this point. Their best offensive player and best defensive player are essentially gone for the year. They've been bit by injuries. And I think, Paul, when you step back and look at it, it makes you appreciate how often Nick Saban has won big, lost really talented coaches, and then been able to recast the staff and recast himself and recast the program to continue to win. It's just something that simply hasn't happened there in Baton Rouge, and it would be about $17 million to buy him out, but I don't feel any institutional hesitation to do that, and Scott Woodward did not hire Ed Orgeron, and I don't feel any sentimentality there. Like, oh, let's give him another year because he won us a title. I think it's going to be pure business pushing on.
Three losses with Florida, Ole Miss, a bye week, and Alabama. I think it's easy to do the math. Let me ask you about Scott Woodward, and you know the line about him is that he goes big. We know who he's hired in the past, and Peterson, and of course Jimbo. What are you hearing in terms of the way that search, assuming it happens, could look?
Well, I mean, assuming it happens, I don't expect Scott Woodward to, you know, hire a G5 guy or a hot assistant. You know, some people in Louisiana may be tied to Joe Brady. I've not gotten any sense from NFL circles that he has interest coming back to college, even for a job like LSU. And I think, you know, it would be – this isn't one of those jobs where you'd have 25 names, right? You're going to have a big name that's going to be expensive to displace and cost a lot of money. And LSU is a place that won't flinch at paying a coach $10 million a year. And, look, Scott Woodward's very close to Jimbo Fisher, and that candidacy certainly recast itself in terms of the possibility of it this weekend with the – with the stunning upset of Alabama. And then from there, I think the names are going to be James Franklin, potentially Lane Kiffin, which would be very good for your ratings, Paul.
And then,
I was thinking about you. And then, you know, I think Luke Fickell's another name. As Cincinnati pushes on, that would certainly have to be deeply explored.
Pete Thamel with us talking about what's becoming a dire situation in Baton Rouge, even though Ed Ogeron is not letting on. And why should he? He's the head coach. And I think one reason he may be smiling is what you just got through saying. They would owe him, what, did you say $17 million or $19 million? Not that there's any difference.
17. Okay. 17, Paul. I guess 17 at the end of the year. If it happened today, obviously, there'd be a few paychecks in between. But it'd be about 17, you know, if – you know, December 1st, January 1st, that neighborhood.
Let's talk about the weekend in college football, because it really was unlike anything we may have ever seen, or at least in modern history. Let's start with Alabama. You alluded to Saban a minute ago. Just your thoughts on what happened out there and what it all means, Pete.
Well, Paul, I really think that I was shocked, and you know, all the credit goes to Texas A&M, which wasn't getting particularly good quarterback play, and in Jimbo Fisher found a way to move the ball, to consistently move the ball. And I don't think this is one of those losses that you're going to look at and be like, oh, there's a blueprint on how to beat them, or they can't recover from it. I think they had four empty red zone trips. Obviously the interception in the end zone, and then three others that were, like Mike Elko figured out a way to win home for field goals, which in modern football is almost like a turnover these days. So, it was as stunning of a result as we've seen in the sport in recent years. And I mean, what a scene there in College Station, right? Like, I just think it was just the thing I can't wrap my mind around was just how pedestrian, basic, not particularly functional that A&M offense was in those back-to-back losses. And quite frankly, in the win against Colorado, it might have been worse. And for them to go in and run up and down on a Nick Saban defense like that was pretty remarkable.
And, you know, we talked to Jimbo Fisher about an hour ago, and you know, sometimes when coaches talk about believing and not giving up, I mean, we do snicker, but in his case, it paid off. And I didn't ask you about that a second ago, but you know, he's at the absolute zenith now of his tenure at A&M. He's about to make $9 or $10 million a year. Pete, you mentioned him in connection with Scott Woodward at LSU. I know we always see crazy things, but it just seems, I don't know why, even maybe more now than ever, inconceivable that he would walk out of there.
I mean, it becomes at a certain point, and he's earned this through a dynamic Hall of Fame level career, just a matter of choice. I'll say this about the LSU job compared to the Texas A&M job. The last three coaches LSU have hired have all won national titles.
True.
Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Orgeron, right? Texas A&M, like, won a laundromat national title at some point in, like, the 50s, and neither you or I could tell you who. Oh, I think it was Bear Bryant, right? Did he win?
I don't even know, it's possible they did.
Yeah, so point is, one place it's proven to be difficult to win at the highest level, and the other place is proven hard to screw up. So, and Jimbo Fisher obviously has a deep friendship with Scott Woodward, and I think if you gave Scott Woodward truth serum and asked him who he want to hire, he'd want to hire the guy he hired at Texas A&M. He'd want to hire that he would know exactly what he's getting. And so I don't think it's that inconceivable. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I don't think the notion of it all is really that crazy. The money isn't going to get in the way. It's going to come down to a matter of personal preference for Jimbo Fisher. And I mean, the good thing for, I think if you're Ross Bjork right now, at least he just already gave him a dump truck of money. So I don't really think he could go back and leverage it for more. I think if you talk about realistic options and percentages, that's certainly a a realistic option that should be at least considered. A&M isn't obviously going to go to the playoffs, so the timing doesn't kill it. Like somebody like Fickell or Franklin, they could end up out of this cycle just with a new signing day if they do end up leading the team to the playoffs. That could make some kind of hiring trickier. But yeah, we won't be searching Wikipedia for the name of the new LSU coach, Paul.
And by the way, Pete, you're very persuasive. As I said the word, it's more inconceivable now more than ever. I started thinking as you were talking, and I'm just free associating here with you because, you know, we do this and nobody's paying attention. But it just now that he's beaten Alabama and Nick Saban, that is the explanation point. So maybe that makes it easier. Speaking of James Franklin, who you alluded to a minute ago, is he still the coach to beat at SC, or have other people entered that fray?
Well, I think he's a very live name at LSU too. I think James is going to have options, and he's going to have an option, a very good option, if not options. But he could also stay. It'll be an interesting test of Penn State's commitment. There's still some sort of paternal ideals that are around that place in terms of commitment to football. And it'll be interesting to see in the next few weeks if they look around at the field and say, look, our guy could conceivably be number one or number two on the list of two jobs that I think, quite frankly, are both better than Penn State. And there aren't a lot of jobs that are better than Penn State, but I think both SC and LSU are. Do they say, hey, James, here's $10 million a year. Here's $9.5 million a year. Here's all the bells and whistles you've maybe been asking for during your time here, and just give him a full-throated commitment. But you know, James Franklin is a name as this season unfolds here. I believe last time I checked, and these things are fluid, Penn State is the number one recruiting class in the country. Franklin's had success in the SEC, which I think is really important. He recruited. If you can recruit top classes to Vanderbilt, Paul, you could he could go make Springfield College a national championship contender. Yeah. So I think that the James Franklin name is going to be a buzzy one, and he's earned it. He's done a really high end job at Penn State.
And I'm in for the high ratings, so let me ask you about Kiffin before you go. he has morphed into a really good coach there. Is he going to start showing up on other lists? You mentioned LSU. What about? I mean, I realize we're not talking about many job openings right now, but it's still October.
Yeah, I think the case for Kiffin there is this: they would probably have to strike out on one or two guys to get down to him. That's not a knock on Lane. I don't know philosophically how he and Woodward were meshed. They're different personality guys, but ultimately LSU can't snap the ball right now, Paul. I mean, they are just dysfunctional offensively, and you know, they were obviously tortured at times under Les Miles in that category too. And look, Lane Kiffin, there may be some antics, but like, he's going to put points on the board, and he's going to bring in dynamic quarterbacks and big time skill guys. And it's going to be a show. Look, the LSU job has morphed into, can you beat Nick Saban or not? Right. That's really what it is. And he has certainly shown the ability to irk Nick Saban. He certainly knows Nick Saban best. And, you know, it would be unbelievable theater, but he will not cower to, duck down, fear recruiting against. And I think fit-wise, I think it's a decent fit. He makes more sense there than he does at that Ole Miss. Now, that has turned into a good fit, but that may not be the best organic one. But I really do think that I think Lane Kiffin could go there and do pretty well, which is a testament to the job Lane has done, growing and evolving through all his different, all the self-induced challenges that Lane Kiffin has put up in his career.
Nobody better on where the world of college football is going coaching-wise than Pete Thamel. Pete, many, many thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Paul, appreciate you.
What a great conversation there, and a lot to digest. We'll take a break. We still have Greg McElroy to break down what happened with Alabama and everyone else in the next hour, and your phone call is right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Okay, we are back. Jimbo Fisher with us during the first hour, and a lot of people have asked, like, is this guy going to call in? Matt from San Antonio called in earlier, the long-suffering, until now, Aggies fan. But what about Legend? Would he have enough nerve? Would he call in and meet his critics? Yes, he will. Legend is on the phone. Go right ahead.
Let me make it clear, Paul. Win, lose, or draw, the Legend is going to call, baby. Let's get that out of the way right now. Let's get it out of the way. And let's get something out of the way, too. I keep it 100. No excuses. We suck, Paul. We friggin' suck. That's the reality of the situation right now, is we friggin' suck. Our offensive coordinator sucks. He sucks big time. But not as big time as our defensive coordinator. He sucks even worse. And I don't know what the players are doing, because I've never been more disgraced in my life by a team with crimson and white on than I was Saturday night. We don't have 300-pound monsters in the middle no more. We got guys getting whooped by true freshmen on the Texas A&M offensive line like they freaking own you, Alabama player. What the hell was that? I'm pissed. That's what I am, Paul. That's what I am. And then I not come on your show 2 weeks ago and tell you Pete Golden sucked.
Yes, you did, Legend.
And did you not say this morning on another show that I watched you on that Pete Golden sucks?
I don't think I said he sucked, but I used
you
a word
said
that,
he
that,
sucked.
That,
you that, said,
that resembles
what
sucks.
Is his buyout?
Well, I did mention that, yes.
Well, I'm going to tell you what his buyout is, Paul. The same thing they give a prisoner in the state of Alabama when they let him go, $10 and a bus ticket the hell out of town. That's what his buyout is, Paul. If somebody needs to frigging get it to him and get him out of town. Now, for Matt from San Antonio, you're my daddy today. Spank me, Matt. Spank me, baby. Spank me. That's right. It's your day, Matt. Congratulations, brother. You put the champ on the mat. 1, 2, 3. Spank me, Matt. You're my daddy today. I'm bent over, Matt. Spank me. You hear that, Pete Golden? You sorry bum. I got Matt from San Antonio as my friggin' daddy today, spanking my behind because you are the sorriest bum defensive coordinator that ever lived in these United States of America. And the only person worse than you is that idiot that ran the ball three times at the 3-yard line. I mean, what's up with that, Paul? Is that inexcusable or is that friggin' inexcusable?
Well, you
got
to remember,
brother?
He once was Brady's coach in the NFL, so I think he was thinking that, you know, Brady to Gronk, Brady to Randy Moss. It's not what he has at Alabama.
That dude's an idiot that shouldn't be calling peewee football, much more than calls for the University of Alabama. Nick, we love you. I worship you. I got a life-size picture of you in my bedroom that I get up every morning and look at and say where we're headed today, Nick. But, brother, let me tell you, take advice from the Legend. These two bums are dragging us down, and if we don't do something, the ship is going to sink soon, brother. It's going to sink soon, Paul. I am beep, 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 and pissed. This is unacceptable at the University of Alabama. I don't care what McElroy, I don't care what any of the experts come on here and say, that it's the players' fault, it's these two moron coordinators' fault, and the sooner we U-Haul these two idiots out of Tuscaloosa, the better our chances are going to be to have a halfway chance. A halfway chance, because we suck right now, brother. A halfway chance. I'm beeping, pissed, matching my daddy. Spank me, brother. Legend out.
Okay, let's check in with Steve next in Alabama. Hello, Steve. Maybe this will be better.
Hey, I hope it's better, but Legend was on target today about a couple of things. And for the dog guy over there, tell him that Legend is spelled in all caps. That's Legend in all caps. But, Paul, my biggest problem, I think, the entire thing seems to me to boil down to defense. Alabama scores 38 points and gets beat by a team that had two previous SEC games the 2 weeks
before.
Well,
remember, so that 38's a little bit deceiving, just like the 41 on the other side is. That 38 involved a block punt for a touchdown. Their 41 involved a kickoff return, which I guess counts. But, yeah, so Alabama's offense only accounted for 31 points.
Okay, and then so A&M scored a total of 32 points in the two previous games.
Correct.
And then in the defense just looks like they don't tackle. They let people run right by them. They kind of arm tackle guys, and somebody might be close to the sideline that could – it looks to me like just get shoved out of bounds instead of just shoving the guy out of bounds. They try to – they throw their arms up, and the guy just plows right through them. And, I mean, the offense had some big struggles too, but, man, the problem seems to be on the defense side. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think ultimately as chaotic as the offense was at times, and I would agree with Legend on the three passes. I mean, and by the way, we Devontae Smith and Mark Ingram, who have earned the right to give an opinion on Alabama football, were both incensed by Bill O'Brien's decision. But this defense continues to be an issue. It was and you can say, well, they were great against Ole Miss, but we're talking about two feared road environments, and that's really the. I mean, if you're asking, you know, what is the recipe to beat Alabama? It used to be an agile quarterback, but you know we saw that streak come to an end this weekend. It's a hostile crowd. The Swamp, Kyle Field, this weekend, a night game in Starkville could be challenging. A road game at Auburn. I mean, these are issues for Alabama right now. We're heading to a break. Let's continue. Greg McElroy joining us in the next hour. Can't wait to hear him. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
As we continue here, post-legend Jimbo Fisher joining us earlier. Good afternoon, Cowboy.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. It's been a while. You know, I've been watching you on your first show, man, on the SEC channel ever since, man. And
thank you.
You don't seem to age at all.
Well, it's amazing how expensive makeup will help you.
Oh, yeah, right. But anyway, Paul, I'm commenting on the Alabama-Mississippi State game. I played at Lee High School, Huntsville, Alabama. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Ricky Moore, who was recruited by Alabama. Well, I played those 2 years when he was there. And here's the thing. The problem is that nobody played their gap. And they just didn't – the crowd, you can't take that away from A&M. But nobody did their job, man. That's all it is to it.
Well, you understand it, Cowboy. There is more to – I mean, coaching is a big part of it, but ultimately players have to execute what they're told to do. And I always love it when a coach says, well, you know, if we had just executed the play – well, that's your job. Your job is to teach the players, and then the rest of it, you have to roll the dice. These are human beings, and, you know, they're also young, and they make stupid mistakes. Hey, thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Isaac, who is up next. Hello, Isaac.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Isaac, we are doing great.
Yeah, well, I wish I was. First of all, this Pete Golden, we all know. We've seen it. We've said it for the last couple of years. It was evident way back when we played against Oklahoma and struggled. Had to put up 40-plus points just to win and get past the playoff. And then we turned around and got destroyed by Clemson, 44-16. It was apparent then. All that being said, as a fan, a lifelong fan, we still got to understand and remember Nick is at the helm. He's going to right the ship. We know that. And we lost points all over the field, field goals, interceptions in the end zone. And at the end of the day, we're still talking about a freshman quarterback. Although he's dynamic as he is, he's still a freshman. But, folks, don't worry about it. At the end of the day, it will be Roll Tide, and we will be making the playoffs.
A lot of optimism there. Kevin is in Austin. Hello, Kevin. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul, I was there Saturday night, and it was just an electric atmosphere. Probably the greatest sporting event I've ever been to in my life, bar none. And it's always great when you can beat Bama and win against the number one team. Even better to do it on a day when the Horns blow a 21-point lead.
Yeah, Kevin, I wondered about that. That had to really what a perfect day for an Aggie.
It was. Yeah, being an Aggie is sort of like being a Cubs fan. And it was a magical day. One thing I wanted to reach out to you about, I found it curious in the game. There were some of the officiating was really concerning. I think even the commentary team on TV called out the two delay of game penalties on A&M's defense, which you've never even seen before. I didn't even know that was a rule. I mean, that's insane. The second part was A&M should have won by 10. Everyone's forgetting there was an illegal procedure on a really critical down that allowed Alabama to score a touchdown on an uncovered receiver in the corner.
Right.
106,000 people in Kyle could see that it was illegal motion, that they weren't set. And the fact that didn't even go to review at that critical of a time in the game when, earlier in the game they reviewed the Derek Spiller run to make sure he got in. And stop the game for that, but they didn't even stop to review that, and it's just unconscionable that we could have lost on account of that play and that touchdown being allowed to happen. And it just seems like it's happening every week in and week out with SEC officiating, and it's really frustrating. I don't know what your take
Kevin,
on that is.
Yeah, Kevin, let me pause here because we do have to take a break here. Hey, thank you. We'll address that in a minute. Greg McElroy joining us in a couple of minutes. It's been a busy one. We'll continue.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.